Welcome to Business Game Changers, where you'll hear expert tips on the big issues and the hottest trends to level up your business game. If you're building a career or building a business, this is Must Hear Radio. Here's your host, Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. Machines are beginning to work side by side with humans. That's according to Arden Manning, an executive from EasyApp. He joins us to discuss the future of artificial intelligence, humans, and machines. His company, EasyApp, is a leader in natural language processing for artificial intelligence, which is the means for allowing machines to effectively interact with humans. So we have a really interesting conversation about artificial intelligence. But after that, hold on, because we have another interesting conversation with three-time world record holder Chris Nunnally. He shares with us his passion for drifting, explains what that is, and then he goes on to share with us his invention, Sled Brake, which is an enhancement for cars that reduces stopping distances and provides a safer driving experience in normal and wet conditions. So that is interesting, too. So now we are going to introduce Arden Manning to the program. Hi, Arden. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Sarah. Thank you for having me.
Accenture conducted a survey that says that 70%, they conducted a survey with 2,000 businesses and IT executives, and 77% expect intelligent machines to increasingly work side by side in a collaborative way with humans. They called it the blended workforce, and it's a work environment business on both sides of the Atlantic are already adopting to gain strategic competitive advantage. Do you see that? I mean, do you believe that humans and machines will be working side by side?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we talk a lot about human-machine collaboration at EasyApp, and I think, you know, what it is these softwares, these artificial intelligence softwares, smart machines, these are tools for humans. You know, they're tools that are going to help us to really increase our productivity and expand our capacity in terms of what we do every day. You know, it's a little bit like if you think of, calculators for accountants and how when a calculator was invented, accountants were then able to really do their job much more effectively and much more efficiently. You know, in the same way, these new softwares are really kind of the same thing.
And do you think of it as like robots or just computers?
Well, I think of it as just computers. I guess, you know, when you say robots, we tend to have a certain picture in our heads, right? But a lot of these softwares are really the tools that are helping people to do their jobs better and helping people to really expand their capacity. You know, they're often called robo softwares. I mean, that's a term that I've heard before. You know, robo journalism, for example. But, you know, the truth is what it is it's an artificial intelligence software that is automating repetitive tasks, that is helping people across the service sector do their jobs. So I think that the term robot might be a bit misleading.
Well, do you think robot is just a moving computer, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But I do think that it's come to, in this day and age where so much of our work is virtual, it's come to have a different connotation. If you said robot in 1955, you know, you would be thinking of a tin can on wheels, right?
R2-D2.
In the 70s, right, or 80s, R2-D2, yeah. But when you say robot today, it has a very different connotation, and that is a very broad definition that does encompass software as well. You know, and the same for artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence has really changed from C-3PO, right, to softwares that run on PCs that interact with us in that way.
Well, but they're really getting into this robot thing. I was looking at. Are you familiar with Martin Kelly?
Mm-mm.
Well, Martin Kelly does this human-looking face because they've been trying to do human-looking robots, and it's really creepy, right? It's almost like these scary movies, and people really don't like them. But Martin Kelly's created a human-looking face that isn't so creepy, and I'll add on my webpage, I'll add like a little thing so people can look at it. But do you think that robots will look like humans, or do you think that they'll end up looking more like R2-D2?
I think that, you know, robots, software, or physical robots will be built to do specific jobs. And that will mean that they will likely not look like humans unless they're interacting directly with humans. But if you think about it, if you go to see a car being built, cars are built almost exclusively with robots. But those robots look nothing like humans because they shouldn't. But I think what's important is these robotic tools are really programmed to basically take human expertise and then deploy that expertise at scale. You know, when you see a car being built, the way that those robots learn to build the car is they're actually taught by a master car builder. They're taught, this is the exact movement you should make. This is exactly what you should do. And they take that expertise of that car builder, and then they deploy that at scale, rolling cars off a line at what speeds of, you know, one every 30 seconds, right?
Well, it's too much of, yeah. It's too big of an investment to, why bother making them look like humans when that's not what your function is going to be anyways, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly right.
And maybe the whole robotic thing is more of a big marketing project right now. Kind of get people excited about it.
I think when you say artificial intelligence or you say robots, it does pique people's interests. And then they want to have a deeper conversation. But I do think people do want to have that deeper conversation, and that the definition has in the last 10 years or 5 years really shifted from, you know, metal and steel to softwares and how those softwares can be used by business.
Well, you're a mission at EasyOp, and how's it spelled?
Y-S-E-O-P. Yes.
But it's pronounced EasyOp, which is kind of cool. Your mission is to turn every computer into a smart machine that partners with people to increase their capacity and performance. Mm-hmm. I imagine that every company would really like this. Do you think that workers will like the smart machines?
I do, because I think it will help them to provide better customer service, for example. It will help them to be more effective and efficient in their jobs. And I think, for example, our software is already deployed in call centers, where the call center workers are able to get expert guidance to help them fix customers' problems on the phone. So the customer likes it because they're getting great customer service, and the call center employee likes it because they're basically being guided and they can learn on the fly. And if they don't know the answer to the question, the computer actually tells them the answer and explains why, how that answer was reached and why it's important.
And as we're getting to, I imagine we're getting to be a lot better at this. So, you know, a lot of people have in their mind some of the original stuff that actually was kludgy and made it harder. But the stuff that is coming out now, like what you're doing, is easier to use, correct? It doesn't bog people down.
Yeah, it's easier for the business. I mean, for example, with our software, as businesses are actually building their own applications, and they're building those applications very quickly, you know, 30 to 90 days on average. And what the software is doing is it's actually acting as a guide for, as I said, customer service representatives, for those in the advice-giving space. And what's interesting about it is, and, you know, at first this might seem counterintuitive, but this actually increases the human interaction, because the call center employee is able to fix the customer's problems more quickly and more expertly, which means he or she takes more calls in a day, which means that the person calling the call center is actually getting through and talking to people who are fixing their problems. So it's quite interesting, but these new technologies can actually bring people together and actually encourage more human-to-human contact.
Well, so one of your values is, we believe that modern technology can bring back old-fashioned customer service, which would be super nice. So, because everything is pretty cold. How can your software do this?
Well, whether this is a true picture of the past or not, I think we often think, you know, if you walked into a bank 20 or 30 years ago, the banker knew your name, right? And they knew what you did in the community. The level of sort of expert attention and advice you got was extremely personalized. It was more than personalized. It was one-to-one, right? We now have enough data on banks now have enough data on every one of their customers. What they need is, they need softwares like EasyOp that can take the expertise of the bankers and apply it to the software, and then use it to guide the frontline tellers, or the people that are interacting with the customers when they call the call center. So that way the conversation can be very much like it was in, you know, 1960. Oh, Sarah, how are you? You know, you said that your children were going off to university. How was their first first semester, you know, that it can be really incredibly personalized using the data that you've shared with your bank.
Assuming that it's the same person and not a new person, right? Right? Because if I talk to Beth the first time and then I talk to Frank the next time and then suddenly Frank knows everything about me, that might be kind of creepy.
Well, of course, you would say, you know, Sarah, I think that you spoke with Frank last time. He's left me a few notes here. And then you can sort of, the conversation can be a bit different. But it's very easy to program that
sure.
functionality in terms of the guidance. But what's important is less the small talk, right? What's important is being able to fix whatever problem you might have called about. And from the bank's perspective, being able to sell the right product to the right customer at the right time.
So your major theme is parsing through the enormous amounts of data and making sense of it. That's our big problem of the day, right? I mean, with all the databases and we're just inundated with information, but yeah. Nobody knows what to do anything with it. So what's your comment on that?
Yeah, in a way, you can almost track this. A few years back, companies were investing in ways to capture and collect data. Then they invested, they thought, okay, we've got the data. Now how do we understand it? Then they invested in things like dashboards, which basically show the data on graphs. But the problem they discovered was that you still need an expert to look at the graph and tell you what the data means. So now they're moving on and looking at language generation software, which can take the expertise of a data analyst and then explain in plain English, French, German, or whatever, what the data suggests you do and why. And, you know, our thinking as a company is that it's the language that really adds the value, because as human beings, that's how we understand the world. And if we see a really complicated graph today and we don't have a software like EasyOp, what we do is we call a colleague over and say, hey, what does this mean? And what should I do about it? And the idea is with EasyOp, right next to that graph, you can have plain language telling you what the graph suggests you do and why.
Well, and I went into your thing and you could parse my LinkedIn and come up with a paragraph summary of what I'm about.
Yeah.
So it takes like a second to do that. Whereas a human being, it would take, you'd have to go through it. And it was actually pretty, I thought I wanted myself, well, maybe I should go in and make my LinkedIn better. Because I look back at it like, well, it is pretty accurate. But it's, you know, I'm a marketing kind. I want myself stuff to sound all great, but mm-hmm. it really was accurate. And I think it would really help. It really shows how something can go in very, very quickly, where even an expert is going to take some time, whereas this could take a second and then just pump it out for you.
You've identified a couple of really interesting points. I think, you know, firstly, I would encourage everyone to play with that. It's on easyop.com under the demos. But what we have a software called EasyOp Smart NLG that does report writing. And one of the biggest really sales points for us in that was mildly unexpected is a machine follows the exact rules you tell it, right? There's no ability for it, it doesn't have a bias. And so what you identified there in terms of what you characterize as marketing language, in certain industries that could also be characterized as biased, for example, financial services, which is an area we work a lot in. And so a report generated by EasyOp follows the rules of the company they're programmed in, and there's no bias in that report.
Yeah. So I have a bias that says that I'm better than I am.
I think we all suffer from that bias.
Well, that's funny. So, but basically you help people take their data and help them drive sales and customer service and mm-hmm. things. And you give an example of how you use it at a bank.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that a little bit? Like how would you use it at a bank?
Yeah. Well, so firstly, we have two softwares. One is Smart Natural Language Generation, and the other is EasyOp Smart Machine. Smart Natural Language Generation writes reports. In banking, you have analysis of stocks, for example. You have analysis of funds. You have quarterly newsletters you have to send out to customers about investment portfolios. All of those reports can be automated. So what, you know, used to take hours or days can take a second. EasyOp Smart Machine works as a guide. So in customer service, in call centers, in the bank on a tablet or behind the counter, it takes the expertise of that bank and guides the employee through the customer service and sales process, so that you're making sure that you're giving, you know, when you're selling a product or you're offering a product, you're offering the right product to the right customer at the right time. And what's important is when EasyOp makes a recommendation, it's not just a recommendation engine. It actually goes on to the next step and says, okay, Sarah, you know, you told me these things about you. And based on that, and based on your financial goals for the next 5 years, we believe the best thing for you is a money marketing account. And here's why, or whatever product it might be. So it actually, the why is very powerful in terms of educating and empowering the customer. But it's also very important for the bank from a compliance perspective, because it's explaining exactly how it got where it got.
Makes sense. Well, how do you do it in healthcare? Because I would think that healthcare would be really advantageous for people.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously a number of uses in healthcare. You know, the first usage that we're seeing is really in the report writing, you know, analysis of data and then generating reports. But there's also use cases in terms of on a tablet at point of care. There's use cases in terms of on a website for sort of online triage. You know, one of the major problems that we have really across the states is people going into emergency rooms when they don't actually need to. And the reason that they're doing that, I think, is that they can't access expertise online. You know, I Googled, you know, my foot hurt. The other day I was running and my foot had hurt. And if you really dive in after you Google that, it scares you, right? Because it jumps to the worst case scenario and says, this is, you know, you have a brain tumor or something, right? So that scares people. I think that encourages a lot of going to the emergency room. With a system like EasyOp, they're able to actually access expertise online. The system can ask them questions, can then understand where they are and what they might be suffering from, and then can make a recommendation based on the rules that are programmed in by the organization. So
it can,
go ahead.
So it can really help them. You know, my sister's a doctor, and
right.
And so it can really, and my other sister's a pharmacist.
Yeah.
So it could really help them make sure they're looking at the problem in different ways and looking at the right, medications and things like that. Does that help the doctor talk to the pharmacist?
Yeah, you know, it could. That isn't the use case that we've looked at, but I know my father is a doctor, and I know that the communication between the doctor and the pharmacist can sometimes be lacking. So you could run a system like EasyUp on a tablet, basically where the doctor keys in some answers to questions, the data is captured and collected, and then reports generated and emailed to the pharmacist along with the structured data on the back end.
Because I know there's more people that are dying. This sounds bad. There's more people dying from taking the wrong medications than from almost any other problem. That and getting diseases in hospitals that you weren't originally have. And so just fixing some of the major issues in those businesses of something like this that could really help them understand things better. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, the first step is really to have the data and to have it organized and structured. And then once you have that in place, it's very easy to overlay a system like EasyOp that can explain the data and that can identify problems and use the expertise of the doctor or the pharmacist with the data.
How much do you get into the actual data processing of the database, or is it more after it's been processed?
Yeah, it's more after it's been processed. It's more when it's pulled together into sort of one place or to a data mart. However, you know, it is possible. I don't need to get too technical here, but it is certainly possible for us to do sort of some of that data work with EasyOp software. But the special part of what EasyOp does is the ability to explain the data in clear, natural language.
So do you come in and say, oh, okay, you guys really have a data issue here. We can help you, but I recommend you getting X, Y, and Z people who are experts at figuring out data first to come in, and then we can really help you. Or what do you do in those scenarios? Because a lot of people really don't understand data.
Well, I mean, the first thing is you need to have structured data. And what I mean by structured data is in some sort of database. You know, our software can't read a book and pull out facts and figures, right? Come into a scenario where a potential client has all their data structured, but it's just maybe too much data or all over the place, we can work with sort of third parties that we've existing relationships with. But generally, most of the clients we go and work with have their data organized somewhere. If their data is organized somewhere and structured, our software can plug into that data and pull from it to write the content.
So it's good enough. Usually, even if it's kind of a mess and they're not that good at it, it's still good enough to be able to do something with it.
Yeah, I mean, we've worked with databases that are, you know, bespoke databases that were built in the 1990s, you know, all the way from there to, you know, state-of-the-art Oracle databases. And it's been not a problem for us in all those scenarios.
Oh, that makes sense. Okay, well, what do you see the future of AI being then?
I think that the future of AI really is going to be in software. Because if you look around, we all have our own, we have devices everywhere. We have computers, we've got iPhones, we've got tablets, you know, you name it, right? The future of AI is going to be taking all those devices and turning them into truly smart machines. And what I mean by that is, to go back to my talking about searching for a medical problem, if you go to Google right now, you have to be the expert. You have to know what you're searching for. But when you come across something that's really complicated, you don't actually know what you're looking for unless you're an expert. So if we can turn all this technology around us into experts, that it asks us questions based on its expertise, like a doctor would when you walk into his office or her office, they ask you one question first, and then they're all asking you questions. Does, you know, your knee hurts? Okay. Does it hurt when you lean on it? Does it hurt when you go upstairs, downstairs? The doctor asks you all those questions to reach a diagnosis because he's the expert in the field, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's what we're mimicking, and that's what we believe that we can have, you know, your PC do that, your tablet do that, your phone do that. That expertise really at your fingertips. And that's what I think the future of AI is.
Well, I think that's perfect. I think my LinkedIn example is kind of a perfect thing too. And I would recommend everybody doing that because it really is an unbiased way of looking at what it is that's up there and seeing if it really is projecting what it is that you're trying to project. I thought that was a really interesting learning experience for me. So, it's the same thing, but in all different kinds of areas. I guess that's why you have that, because it's something people can immediately identify with.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, with our software, it doesn't have expertise preloaded. You know, our customers build their own applications. It really is a software, and they build their applications with their own expertise. And so, you know, we have some demos on our website, as you say, the LinkedIn one sort of being one of the fun ones to play with. But those are all just using, you know, the expertise of the people in our office to be able to show the reasoning. But, you know, our customers really across the service sector are using their expertise with this software.
The only thing it misses is, and this is where you have to look at, I know I'm just talking about one aspect here, but the LinkedIn, you have to look at, it misses if you're good at it or not, but it doesn't, because that's where your, what do you call it? The people that give you recommendations come in.
Absolutely.
Are they,
yeah.
And are they coming across as, yeah, this person's really good at what they're doing? Not just the fact that they did it, but are they good at it? So that's really good. That's a really good little application. But, you know, I thank you so much for joining us today and talking about your software. I think this is kind of this is the next generation. And one thing I saw was that back in 2000, well, this has been natural language programming has been around for, maybe you should explain what natural language programming is quickly.
Sure. Natural language generation has really been around for the last 20 years. What's changed is two things. It's gained the ability to explain its reasoning process. It's gained the ability to explain the why when it writes. Also, with EasyApp, it's gained the ability to let customers build their own applications. So those two abilities expand its value for business, and they also make it, as a proposition, something that is much more attractive. So that's just really come into its own, I would say, in the last 5 years.
Well, and it you know, it's been around for decades, but it hasn't been commercially viable until 2008. So you're one of the forefront companies in this field. Are there many competitors that are doing this?
You know, there's not a lot in the field, and we're the only one that works in multiple languages. We're the only one that can explain the why when it writes, and we're the only one that lets customers build their own applications. So in a way, we don't have a direct competitor. There is one other company that does language generation. You basically ship them your data. They have an internal software, and it shoots back written content. So, But it's a very small market right now. There's not a lot of companies in this space.
Yeah, you're kind of in the forefront. You're forging away. You're burning new trails. That's not always easy to do.
No, a lot of what we do is education. A lot of what we do is explaining that this exists, because I think a lot of people don't really know that this exists. They realize they have a problem. They realize they're overwhelmed with data. They say, oh, I wish we could do something with all this data. You know, I get, this dashboard doesn't really help me get at what I need. But what they don't understand is that the software is out there and it could help them.
Well, how many countries are you in?
We have offices in France, the UK, and the US.
Okay. And so you're heavily in each one of those markets. Are you in other markets besides those countries?
Those are our foremost. Basically, I would say the EU more generally.
Okay.
The UK and the US are our biggest markets right now.
So how many different languages are you doing this in? Because that's a lot of – each language is its own animal, isn't it?
Well, with our software, when you're building an application, you do two things. First, you explain your best practices. And then after you've done that, you basically go through and tell it what words it can use. You know, we all have our own voice as organizations. So you sort of explain to it, okay, I want to write in English, and these are the kind of words I use, these are the words I don't use. If you're doing the same application and you want to write in German, we've got German programmed. It already knows how to write German. So you keep the same best practices, and you just, the second half of the work is just saying, okay, I want to write in German as well as English, and these are the kind of words I use, these are the kind of words I don't use. Our software right now knows English, French, German, and Spanish, and we have Portuguese and basic Japanese on the way.
Oh, wow. So do you have a group of just natural language experts on your staff?
Yeah, our co-founder, Alan Kaiser, leads a team of basically experts in computer science and linguistics, and they work on adding additional languages as well as the functionality to build your own, which is really kind of a game changer in this space, because as I said, no one else lets you do that.
Well, I kind of see Star Trek there a little bit, where they have that thing where it allows a different language to be translated quickly.
No, the universal translator. Yes, I know what you're referring
to. I want
to.
That.
I wish that we had that as well. This is not so much that. This is not translating, because it knows the language. What
sure,
it's doing is
okay.
Explaining the data to you in your language.
Well, so, but do you have the foundation to be eventually be able to create something like that?
No, because translation is a different
beast. Oh, it's a whole different animal.
Yeah. I mean, what we have the ability to do is translate data into language. So in that sense, maybe there's some translation, right? But translating from English to French is very different, because the way you express ideas in one language is different than the other.
Well, how much do people need to have expertise in computer science and programming versus linguistics?
To build an application with our software, you actually don't need to have expertise in either of those things. We are rolling out an interface where you basically click and drop to define your business rules, your best practices, and you click and drop to sort of tell it what words it can and can't use. And so you can be a technical user with no computer science background and build an easy app application.
So can you be kind of an idiot and still do it, like me? Not an idiot. Hey, I have a lot of computer science background, but...
Well, you have more computer science background than me. I'll use myself as an example. I am, I work in marketing. I've worked in PR. I am not a computer person. I can write a basic Excel formula, for example. I can do that. And I can easily build easy app applications with the business user environment.
Let's be honest. If you're going to try to build something and it's a new language, it takes you – I mean, it could take you a month of just really focusing. And who has that much time learning a whole new language? So,
well, so you don't have to – just to be clear.
No. This isn't like that, right?
No. You're not adding new languages. We are the ones who code in the different languages. What we're talking about is building the actual application, building, you know, for example, the report it's writing, or building the interface tool at the bank and integrating it. You're not going to be able to write an application or build an application in a language you don't speak, because you need to tell it what words it can use and what the voice is of your company. So it's basically then going to mimic your writing style at scale.
It's kind of a different paradigm, isn't it?
It is. It is. I think it is a very different paradigm, but I do think it's a prime example of how human-machine collaboration, to come back to the beginning of our conversation, it's really here, and there's really softwares out there that are in enhancing human capacity every day.
Well, it's really something that people should look at because, you know, I've done a lot of work with back in the day. It hasn't been as recently, but once you fundamentally understand it, you understand it for life, I think, of just modeling data in a business and really understanding data. And, you know, and I always said the biggest thing is just, you know, our future, 50 years in the future, will be just taking the data and doing something with it because we're going to be so much, we're going to be so far ahead in gathering data. But what are you going to do? I mean, you can automate almost everything, but it'll be the time it takes to automate and use the data that will be the effort. And mm-hmm. you're that next phase. It just, I didn't think yeah. it'd take 25 years.
No, but I think it hit home very quickly for a lot of companies. You know, if you invest millions of dollars in getting real-time data and you get the real-time data and then you realize you can't understand it in real time. And that's when you realize you need softwares that explain in English what the data means, what you should do about it and why.
And in real time that the computer streams it to you, right? I mean, even exactly, an expert yeah. can't do that. They have to take a half an hour or so just yep. to really analyze the data.
Yep.
Where this thing can just come through. And that's what was so cool about the LinkedIn. It was just like, here's the summary, unbiased about you. And, you know, yep. that's pretty cool. Okay, well, awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. And I look forward to seeing more from your company. How can they see more from you?
Absolutely. It's easyop.com and it's spelled YSEOP.com.
Okay. And I can put this, your information on my radio page and on my website?
Yes, please do.
Okay. That sounds great. So we will do that for users. And thank you so much for stopping by.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
I'll have the contact information and EasyOps website on my website, sarahwestall.com, or on my radio page at webtalkradio.net. And now we are going to introduce Chris Nunnally to the program.
Hi, Chris. Welcome to the program.
Woohoo! Hey, good to be here.
Okay, so you've set many world records. Just one?
No, I've been on three teams that have set world records.
Oh, okay. So what world records have you set?
For racing Appaloosa horses, we set two world records with a horse called Zepana Bull and a horse called Dervish Maid.
Okay, and that's race horses.
That's right. And for drifting, I had the world's largest drift school in Las Vegas, Nevada in 2011. So I've been part of three teams that set world records. You know, I mean, not the end-all and be-all, but it's kind of cool.
That is cool. If you can set a world record, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, when you think about it, you're like, whoa, I'm the top?
So you were the president of the Ferrari Club in Alabama for a few years. What did you do? Did you drive Ferraris around? I know you don't do that, but...
Well, they're just a bunch of fun guys, and they love their cars. They like to wash their cars and show off their cars and drive their cars around and drink a little. And so we would have events. We'd do track events. We'd go out to Little Talladega. You know, it's Alabama. So you go out to the tracks and you race around the Little Talladega, not the big Talladega track. This is not Talladega Nights or some NASCAR thing, but it's a road course.
Okay.
So there's a Little Talladega race course. We'd go out there and race. And then once I organized a big event where we did the Barber Track, which is racing this weekend in Birmingham, Alabama. And we closed off a bunch of roads in Mountain Brook and Leeds and Moody to the Barber Track so that everybody could drive their race-prepped cars on city streets. And we had a big parade, and we had a bunch of girls show up all costumed up to make it sexy, and to get the community involved in it.
Okay.
We had people just packing the streets to watch all of us, and we had a bunch of good race car drivers bring their track cars out, like Jim Clark. I mean, just some big names, and we had a big dinner. But I mean, come on, it's a Ferrari club. What are you going to do, right?
You have fun. You do it. But you also are a drifter.
That's right.
What's a drifter?
Oh, it's fantastic. We slide cars sideways for fun.
And people compete?
They do. They do. Some people compete. Some people just do it as a hobby. And other people take it semi-professionally. And a few people take it professionally.
Okay. How do you take it professionally?
There's a D1 Formula Drift professional race circuit. You have to get a license. You have to be invited. It's on TV. Red Bull does it, which is it's all big fun. But the sponsors pay for a lot of things. I'm not at that level. I'm more at the amateur and semi pro level.
And the fun level.
That's what it's all about.
Okay, but you came up with a patented new product based on all your experience with cars and drifting and things.
Specifically drifting, that's right.
Specifically for improving brake performance. So can you tell us about that, and how does it perform, or how does it improve brake performance?
Well, more friction.
Okay.
It's not like you're changing the laws of physics. I mean, if you want to brake faster, you need more friction. All right, well, think about your car tires.
Well, what is this for? Is it for improving brakes in everyday tires, or?
That's right.
Is there, okay.
Sure. On any car, on a race car, on a street car, anyone who wants to be safer, stop faster, go faster, it all adds up.
And how you're doing it with more friction?
That's right.
And
okay, well, think about your car tires. If your car tires were sticky and tarry, you could stop really fast, but you wouldn't get great gas mileage, right?
Yes.
Okay, so car manufacturers can't give you really sticky tires, truly sticky tires, because that would ruin your fuel economy, and they have CAFE fuel rules and that sort of thing. So what you really need is you need something with a lot of friction only when you're braking, not when you're...
So how do you do that? Driving.
Ah, well, that's where the sled brake comes in. And these are small trays, I would describe them, that deploy just in front of your tires when your anti-lock brakes kick in. So these trays go down to the road surface, and they're super sticky. So you get all this braking power from these sled brakes touching on the ground. And then when you're finished braking, they pull back, they retract, and so then you drive and you get great gas mileage again. So you only use the more friction when you're braking.
Interesting. So do you think that you could get the big manufacturers to do this? Would it save a lot of lives?
It would save lives. You know, getting a product like this is a low probability thing because it's such a radical innovation. People claim they want change and innovation and all that. They really don't. What people like is they want to see something that worked in the past done again. This is probably too new. The first guy who made a smartphone was not Apple, but
sure.
After it's not new for a while, people come around to this. So if I get it, if I were to become successful with this particular idea, the first time at bat, I would say that I'd pretty much struck the lottery. So I'm not really expecting it, but I am pitching it to some venture capitalists. You call them VCs. So I'll be meeting some VCs in Silicon Valley next month. And I'm also talking to, you know, even this little town of Birmingham where I live has some venture capitalists, so I'll talk to them. I'll see if anyone really gets it the first time around, but more.
Well, can you use it in the drifting circuit and in alternative kind of race cars and different areas as well?
Well, I mean, I came up with it while we were drifting because we wanted to come up with a way to cheat.
Sure. Yeah.
But, yeah, you can definitely use it in drifting, and it would improve racing, but you'd have to change the rules for race cars. So there are a lot of hurdles to actually getting it accepted and implemented.
Well, but it's kind of an interesting concept that you could.
It'll happen eventually. Now, the coolest thing about it is when it rains, because when you have a wet road, these trays deploy, but they don't put much pressure on the ground, so they're not really braking the car. but they sweep the water away from the tires behind them. So they're almost like windshield wipers for your tires. So the water doesn't get to your tires. So it's almost like driving on a dry road when it rains.
So it's safer in that way.
Oh, it's tons safer. It's safer by far. In wet roads, you're driving as if you had the grip on your tires as a dry road. And then on dry roads, you get super friction if you want to put a lot of pressure on these sled brakes to brake fast.
Wow, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, eventually this will be adopted, but the question is, will I be alive when it happens?
Well, that's what happens when you're a trailblazer.
It
is what it is.
Yeah.
Well, how interesting. How can people go and see more about this?
Sledbrake.com.
Well, thank you so much, Chris, for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
That's all I have today, so I hope you all have a wonderful day.